You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas Community College District. Yesterday, I broadcast my show. Unfortunately, we had a technical glitch that I only discovered when I went into the post-production. So I'm going to have to redo the show, which I'm doing today. So I do have a little bit more information. And this will be a fairly short show, but it is on a breaking news story that really has what they call in the news business a lot of legs. And that is the trade that our president made of five high-ranking Taliban terrorists, many of them wanted by the United Nations for killing hundreds, if not thousands, of Shiites, primarily in Afghanistan, that the president traded for an American sergeant that has been in captivity for going on five years, when he walked off his base that he was assigned to. And that is disturbing a lot of people that have been in the military or in the military today. Now, why? I was in the military for over 5 years. My father was a professional soldier, was in the military for over 23 years in the Army. I was in the Air Force. And I can understand why people are upset. Now, a little background. And why this is important. First, the president violated the law by doing this without giving proper notice to Congress. And proper notice to Congress requires 8 people to be informed. And that includes both in the House and the Senate Intelligence Committee, both the chairman of each of those committees plus the ranking minority. So that's a total of 4 people there. Plus the leadership, and that is the Senate Majority Leader, as well as the Senate Minority Leader, and the House Speaker, as well as the House Minority Leader, for a total of 8 people. That notification was not given, and that is the requirement of the law. You 30 days before any such trade, if you want to call it that, and that's what people are calling, trading 5 Taliban, fairly high-ranking Taliban. 2 of them were governors, 1 was head of or deputy for intelligence, and most, not all of them, had links to Al-Qaeda. And they've been at Gitmo in Cuba for many, many years. They were caught in Afghanistan and shipped to Gitmo where they've been prisoners. Now, I'm sure they've been interrogated many, many times, and most of the information that they have, the intelligence services there, both the CIA, the Army, Marines, have gotten the information out, we would hope. And I think that's a fair assumption, but I have no personal knowledge. But these are the bad guys, folks. These are what's called a high-value target. And the problem with many of the prisoners in Gitmo that released, they went back to the countries that they came from and picked up where they left off. And that is the fear, and I think a justified fear, of many Americans, including those, for example, that are serving in Afghanistan today, that we've released terrorists for maybe a traitor. I'm not going to go that far yet, because that's rather a harsh term. And I think we need to be very, very careful here and be a little bit more precise. And that is one of my concerns that I'll get into in a minute. But members of Congress, both in the Senate and in the House of both parties, are questioning the president's actions, as am I, and as are the American people. You see, my take on this is I believe the president and the White House and the people that have his communication strategy, that are formulating that strategy, really thought this was going to be a big PR success and this was really going to change the subject. Notice we're not talking about the scandals at the Veterans Administration today, nor are we talking about the U.S. economy most likely is in a recession. We're not talking about that today. What we're talking about is President Obama's trading of five high-ranking Taliban terrorists for one American soldier that was captured by the Taliban, or actually was captured by in Pakistan. Well, let me back up. He was in a base, a military base in Afghanistan, and then he walked off. Now, there are conflicting stories here. The people that were on the base said he completed his tour. He had guard duty. He completed it. He was relieved of his duty, and then he had his military equipment was folded, namely his rifle, his armor, helmet, his gear, if you will, and then he left the base. Technically, that is, according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, that is, he went absent without official leave. Now, remember, this is in a war situation, in a combat zone. He's really surrounded by hostiles. That's why they circled the armored vehicles they were in and had guards posted, including razor wire around it. They weren't in friendly territory. This is not the United States. This is in a combat zone. And he was there to search out and destroy the Taliban as well as any remnants of the Al-Qaeda that were there. That is his primary mission, as well as train Afghan army and police forces. So it's clear to me, as a minimum, he's absent without official leave. And that's important because if you're absent without official leave, you can face a court-martial. It doesn't necessarily have to be a court-martial, but usually it is, as well as be punished. Now, it might be confinement or loss of rank. Remember, he was a PFC at the time. Confinement of base isn't going to really punish him because you want to be in the base. And as I said yesterday, and remember, I'm redoing the show of yesterday, so it's going to be a little different. I thought he was crazy to do what he did, that he thought that he could just walk off in what I would consider as a minimal hostile territory. And he at least said to several people that were in his company and platoon that he was thinking of walking from Afghanistan to India. Well, that's rather a long walk, to say the least, but it's through areas that the Taliban control. So a number of people would say the gentleman, and this is Bode, was nuts, crazy. Now, I don't consider him a kid. I've heard a number of both news folks as well as talk said he was a kid. He's not a kid. He was in his 20s. That's an adult. And he volunteered and wanted to be there. Now, he soured on that. He wasn't happy being where he was. But you volunteered, sir, and the Army assigned you to where you're at. And you don't desert the people that are protecting you as you are protecting them. And you see, there's a narrow line between being AWL and deserting. And a lot of it depends on the intention of the person doing it. If this private at the time, Bo, intended to really leave permanently the military and never return, that is desertion. And in time of war, you are facing the possibility of execution. It's a capital offense. Now, practically, it seldom happens, and that you need to understand. Because prior to Civil War, as well as in the American Revolution War, one of the common punishments for desertion was flogging. And we're talking several hundred times being flogged. However, on some occasions, you could have been hung. And that's why I mentioned yesterday, I asked myself, well, what would George Washington do? Because he was faced with this, both in fighting our Revolutionary War, as well as the Indian Wars, when he served in the Virginia militia. And he did hang deserters, and he had many of them flogged. So you need to understand that both the history and what the penalties are, and you're trained when you join the military about the Uniform Military code. And I needed to say something right up front. For those that are new listeners, the way you listen to this show is go to the prankpops.wordpress.com site, companion blog to this show. That's prankpops, prankpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to the most recent, usually 60 shows. And at the bottom, you'll have links to the bottom of the page. You'll have links to all my shows, a complete portfolio of all my shows. But in between, you'll have my notes, some of my notes, that I used to prepare this show. And that includes YouTube videos, which there are many of them here, as well as articles, and there are many of them here. And what I did, because I really was updating this and wanted to know the difference, is the difference between desertion, AWL, and there is a very important difference. And I urge you to read that. I'm not going to go over the code. And there's a reason why I'm emphasizing this. It's very easy for someone that served with him to call this gentleman a deserter. I'm very tempted to call him a deserter, but I think we need to not jump the gun here to come to a conclusion for this reason. There are technical definitions of the difference, and a lot of it is on his attention because there are people, I won't say every day, but routinely go absent without official leave. They don't show up for work. And if you don't show up for work, you're absent without official leave. In other words, if you're supposed to show up at work at a certain time and you don't, you're AWL. I remember when I was in the military, I was almost never sick. I was ordered to go home once because I was sick. But I always showed up, and I always stayed late. But that was my choice. But that's the standard. It is like a job, but you're in the military. And the military people are relying on you to show up. That's sort of the first requirement, show up. You're trained to do a job, and your team or wherever, your unit, wherever you're assigned, is depending on you to do your job. And the first thing to do your job, you have to be there. So if you're not there, technically you're AWOL, absent without official leave. Remember, he was in the Army, and that technically, historically, that's what they called it. Now, one of the problems is sometimes it's just miscommunication. Someone could have called in and said, listen, I'm sick, and you can do that, or you need to go to the hospital and see a doctor. But if you have an appointment with a doctor and don't show up, you can technically be absent without leave. But that's not desertion. See, a lot of what's absent without official leave is people, for example, have leave and then they overstay the leave and get back late and they're not there for work when they should be. And then technically, there's roll calls. And if you miss it, you're AWL and can be written up. Now, we didn't have someone taking attendance. Remember, I was an officer. But I had bosses, so they knew if I didn't show up. It wasn't a problem with me and most people in the military. It can be a problem when people, for example, have leave and overstay the leave. In other words, they get drunk, for example, and they don't get back to their ship or their unit or wherever in a timely manner, miss roll call, and then are written up, and you can be punished for that. And it could be reduction in pay. It could be a reduction in rank. Now, I'm giving this background for a reason. Many of the people that were in his unit overseas used the word deserter. He deserted his unit. Now, in the non-legal sense, he did desert his unit because he was in a war zone. He left his equipment behind, neatly stacked, supposedly, and just left. The question is, and again, it goes to intent. Did he intend to just walk off for, let's say, a couple hours or a day or two? Or did he intend, for example, to walk to India and then maybe somehow get back to the United States? So intent is rather crucial, and that's why you can't jump to conclusions. because he might just have wanted to take a walk. Let's give him the full benefit of the doubt. And let's say he did that. Technically, he's AWOL. A minimum, he's AWOL, absent without official leave. Because no one is going to get leave in a combat zone, and no one wants leave in a combat zone. That's why many people say, listen, he was young and rather crazy. He didn't really think this one through. And what happened is he was captured by this. There are a lot of tribes, the Kahanis, and they are, the suspicion is, a strong suspicion, they're controlled by Pakistani intelligence, and they captured him. They did not kill him, and to the best of my knowledge, they didn't torture him. We don't know that yet. But he was kept a prisoner for going on five years. He wasn't free to leave. So that's why I would not quickly jump to the gun that he is a deserter. He's definitely absent without official leave, and who knows what his intent was. I don't know what his intent was. And that's why the United States Army, once this gentleman gains his health back, is going to question him. He better have a lawyer, because intent will be a key point here. Because if he says, listen, I just wanted to go for a walk, the whole situation where I was getting me down, yes, he would be guilty of AWL. Now, if he says, no, I really intended to go back to the United States, walk to India, and permanently leave the Army and never return, that's desertion. That is desertion. Now, some of you will say, well, that's a fine point. Well, yes and no, because, like I said a few minutes ago, literally every day someone is AWOL, without leave, official leave. They didn't show up to work. Now, another fact situation is the time you're AWL. You know, if it's a few hours or a day, that's certainly one thing. There are extenuating circumstances. You know, if you were supposed to be back in your barracks before midnight Sunday and you return, let's say, 8 o'clock Monday morning, well, you're AWL, but it's for 8 hours. And it's obvious you wanted to return. You see the point here? And I think it's a very important point. Maybe he just wanted to go for a walk for a couple of hours, a couple of days, and then return. Definitely guilty of being absent without official leave. However, if his intention was to walk to India and then ultimately go back to the United States and not return to military control, then he is a deserter. And you need to understand this. There's a lot of AWL going on with varying degrees of punishment, and there unfortunately is a lot of desertion going on. You don't get a much publicity on this, but it is happening, and there's very, very little serious prosecution of this. Yes, there is some punishment, and occasionally there is a court-martial. Now, why is this important, and why is this of concern to the people there? If I were in his unit, I would consider him a deserter, folks, because I'm relying on him, and now my unit is one less person. That's one less person, for example, that can pull guard duty. That's one less person that can go on patrol. That's one less person that can fall out and is available for other duties as assigned. You see, in the military, you have a mission, and it's a team. And whether you like to be there or not, you're ordered to be there, and that's where you should be, not walking around, especially in a war zone, a combat situation. And that's in a very important point. They were not in the middle of Texas on an army base. They're in a war zone in Afghanistan. And that is why there is a deep resentment by those who served with him. Because what happened is after he left, there was a concerted effort for many, many weeks to try to find him, because they were not sure exactly why he was missing. Now, the Army, my understanding, did a thorough investigation and asked the people there many several times as to what happened. And they have concluded that he deserted. But formally, they can't really say that until they hear his side of the story. But they did an investigation at the time, in country, to get the facts of the situation. And they were trying to find him. Now, let's be fair here. He could have been captured at the base. Someone could have penetrated and captured him there. Highly unlikely, but it's possible. You're hearing stories that maybe went to the latrine and they snuck up on him, gagged him, and grabbed him. I don't think that's what happened, but it's possible. What I really think he did, he went off base. And remember, this is not a permanent base. Think of it as a group of vehicles, armored vehicles, that were in a circle and with razor wire around it. And they also had a guard post that gave them some view of the area. But it's not what you and I would think of as a permanent Army or Air Force, Marine, Navy base or port. This was a combat situation. And I always emphasize that. We were at war with the Taliban. They were trying to kill our professional soldiers there, both Army, Marines, special operators. And they also were trying to capture. They truly were trying to capture to get intelligence, as we were. What do you think the U.S. Army and Marines were doing there? They were trying to either kill the Taliban or capture them to get intelligence. Intelligence is very, very important. Very important. So I'm not surprised the Taliban tried to capture him, especially if he comes walking down the road and you're the Taliban, you grab him. And this Kahani group grabbed him. As a result, he spent 5 years being a captive, and they were trying to trade him, and they were successful in trading him for 5 high-level Taliban terrorists that were in prison in Cuba, in Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, where we have a facility there, where today there are over 100. There's still quite a few prisoners there. You got to remember, many of those prisoners have been released, have gone back to their country of origin, and then picked up where they left off, and that is the fear of many American soldiers. But if you're in a combat zone in Afghanistan, and you're an American soldier, you know they're trying to kill you, and you know they're trying to capture you. So you're going to do your best to make sure that you kill them first and you're not captured. That's just the reality of the situation, the cold, hard facts. So to the Army's credit and to his fellow soldiers' credit, for many weeks and months, they were looking for him. They had patrols out. They had helicopters with soldiers being dropped off and looking for him. There was a concerted effort to try to find him, and they didn't find him. They did not, but they really gave it a strong try. And here's the tragedy of it. Several American soldiers, at least 6, were killed. Many of them on patrols looking for this private, whether he was a deserter or absent without official leave. I'll let the Army decide that. And I really don't think there should be command influence, starting with the chief of staff, and he knows that. Now, if you ask me what's going to happen, he will probably be honorably discharged. And that's going to make a lot of veterans way upset. But it's not the first time that a deserter, not someone AWL, but a deserter has been discharged, a general discharge. Now, why do I mention that? Your military benefits depend on what type of discharge you have. I served in the Air Force for 5 years. I resigned my commission. I was there through September. Well, I'm not going to give the year. The point is, my military commitment was over. I had a choice. I was ordered to go to Washington, D.C., or I could resign. And I decided that I was going to pursue a career in the private sector, so I resigned. I submitted my resignation. That's what an officer can do. In other words, I've totally completed my 5-year commitment. Initially, it was 4, but I accepted a regular commission, so I went, which added a year. I completed my 5 years of military service. At that point, I could either go to where I was ordered to report on a certain date, and if you get those orders, you have to report either prior to or on the date and time specified. You're reassigned. Or I could resign my commission, and I chose to resign my commission. It's done all the time. It's done every day. That's how it works for officers. For enlisted, it is usually you have a certain time period. After that, you can either re-up or re-enlist or leave. And if you leave, most people leave with an honorable discharge, which means they get whatever benefits they're entitled to. Remember, what was in the news the previous week? The veterans not getting their health benefits that they were promised by the United States government and the American people. And that's why many Americans, including veterans, were quite upset. And this has been a problem with the Veterans Administration for years and years and years. It's nothing new. And the American people have to get on the politicians' backs on this, because they're responsible for oversight and they are responsible for making sure that the Veterans Administration has the money and the people to do its job. And apparently it does not. It does not, because veterans are waiting rather long periods of time to just get basic care, to just get an appointment to see a doctor. Not days or weeks, but months, if ever. And the problem is sometimes you have a medical condition that can't wait days, weeks, or months. And what the Veterans Administration would tell you, go to your local hospital's emergency room. They couldn't help you. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a scandal. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking today is about the President of the United States, very proud of the fact that he's made this trade without consulting Congress, which he's required to, by law, to do 30 days in advance of it. And that's not a big deal. Well, it's a big deal in terms of the law, but that's a phone call. That's 8 phone calls. And it doesn't even have to be phone calls. It could be 8 emails. I don't know what the exact protocol is or procedure to do this, but that's what we're talking about. Notification of Congress what you're doing. And then it's up to the leadership of Congress, both in the Senate and the House, how to respond. And many of both parties, but primarily the Republicans, are saying this should not be done. You don't negotiate with terrorists, and that's exactly what we were doing. And don't give me this nonsense, there was a middleman. No, 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 no. You're negotiating with terrorists. And you're also trading terrorists, rather high-ranking terrorists, for this one Army private that was promoted when he was in captivity for 5 years to sergeant. Now, I'm not familiar with that. And I still haven't been able to run down that situation. I'm not saying that's not possible, because I am aware that people have been in captivity for long periods of time and have been promoted. My only question is, the Army did an investigation in 2009-2010 timeframe, and it's clear to me, as a minimum, this private was AWOL. So until he is back in the custody of the United States Army under military control and you hear his side of the story, I don't think I would be promoting him. Now, I'm not saying he didn't deserve a promotion. I'm saying there's questions here, some serious questions, especially if the people in his unit, in his platoon, and in his company think he was the deserter. Now, let me tell you what, and I said this yesterday, I find this really, really suspicious, at least on the first glance. And I'm going to link this to Benghazi for a number of reasons. Remember, in Benghazi, we lost our ambassador, Chris Stevens, as well as another State Department employee and 2 CIA contract personnel that were there to provide security. In other words, 4 people were killed. Many were injured, some seriously. And that was a result of a terrorist attack on September 11th, 2012, the anniversary of 9/11. Now, why is that important? We today have a long list of questions that simply have not been answered about Benghazi. And who is the logical group of people to talk to determine exactly what was going on there? There have been press reports that there were at least 35 Central Intelligence Agency employees or contractors in Benghazi, separate from the State Department employees. That's a lot of people, folks. And my question has always been, what were they doing there? There have been press reports that they were interrogating terrorists as well as gathering intelligence. But their primary mission was in gathering arms, initially to provide the rebels, and then to in Libya, and when the Gaddafi regime was overthrown, to gather some of the weapons that were captured from Gaddafi that he had stored all over the country on military bases, stockpile them in a warehouse in this so-called CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, annex, and then ship the weapons to Syria, to the Syrian rebels. Now, there's a couple of problems with that. The first and obvious one, the president never sought congressional authority to intervene in Libya. He did it on his own hook. Second, he obviously signed a CIA finding that I'm assuming, whether right or wrong, I don't know, because it's secret and it is classified. But by law, he has to notify those same eight people that he had to notify in this situation and didn't, namely the leadership, both in the House and the Senate, the chairman of the intelligence committees in the House and the Senate, plus the minority, ranking minority member, as well as the House and Senate leadership, namely the Senate majority leader and the Senate minority leader, the House Speaker, as well as the House minority leader. That is, again, by law. I don't know whether he complied with that law. But technically, you need it. It's called a finding, and it authorizes it's the authorization for the Central Intelligence Agency, as well as other organizations, to engage in activities such as gathering intelligence in Libya, as well as gathering arms and shipping arms to the rebels in Libya as well as Syria. Now, what's the problem with that? Besides not having any congressional authority to do it, just like he didn't follow the law here. You know, initially I said, well, he'd be crazy not to sign this finding and notify him. Now I don't know. Now it's a little bit doubtful. If they're acting cavalier, they're disregarding law. That opens a whole question mark, because there's a whole list of laws that President Obama is ignoring and rewriting. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the definition of a tyranny. The President of the United States does not make the law. He enforces the law. He doesn't get to pick and choose which law to enforce or to change the law unilaterally, and that's what he's doing, both in the immigration area, in the drug area, and now apparently in the national security area. We have a president that is acting more and more like a tyrant, that he really thinks he's above the law. And you better believe there are people in Congress, as well as in the general public, that say there is a remedy under the Constitution when a president does things that are contrary to the law. It's called impeachment. It is called impeachment. And you better believe that the reasons or indictments, the counts, if you will, are being prepared now. Will they call for his impeachment this year? I don't think so. There is a great reluctance to do that because it's historic. He's the first black president. You can't impeach the first black president. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a constitution that was written by the founding fathers, and they deliberately, intentionally put the clause concerning impeachment in. Why? To protect the people against a tyranny, a tyrant, a president acting like a tyrant. And he is acting like a tyrant, that he thinks he's above the law. And it's up to Congress to call him. And if he keeps doing it, don't be surprised if next year there will be an increasing clamor to impeach this president, because there's a lot of grounds that you can add to it. And Benghazi will be one of the areas that will probably discover they acted contrary to both law and to the Constitution, that his administration was negligent, criminally negligent, in protecting our people in Libya and particularly Benghazi. And the way he handled it was a dereliction of duty. I still don't know where the president was when all this was happening, and neither did the people in Congress. Then there's a lot of suspicion he was preparing for a debate, which I find despicable, because the place of the president when something like this is going down is in the Situation Room, communicating with the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, as well as his chief military advisors, the Joint Chiefs, and the Central Intelligence Agency. It's not preparing for a debate. It's not preparing for a debate because there are logs that the people that were in the White House, at least two of them, were there to do exactly that, help the president with his debate preparation. And remember, he was running for president. Now, what's similar from Benghazi as well as this situation with the trade is that after the attack and after the Americans were brought home, in other words, the CIA contingent as well as the remaining State Department contingent, both the ones that could, that both are wounded, the bodies that we had, as well as the living, got out of Benghazi and ultimately got home. What happened? And remember, most of them were CIA, Central Intelligence Agency people. They were asked to sign confidentiality agreements. In other words, don't disclose what happened. As far as I'm concerned, that is an obstruction of justice because it is the responsibility of Congress has the responsibility for oversight and to getting to the bottom of what happened in Benghazi. And the logical place to start is with the 35 CIA employees and contractors that are there to hear why they were there, what they were doing, and what happened. Until we have not heard that yet. And it's my understanding, with maybe a few exceptions, they don't even know the names of these people. But what were they do? What was the administration doing in the background? They were, one, trying to force them to sign these agreements. Number two, they were giving lie detectors tests to see whether or not any of them were talking either to Congress or the news. In other words, they were trying to intimidate the witnesses. And as far as I'm concerned, they were obstructing justice. They were doing what we call in the military CYA. They were covering your ass. And they wanted the people there to basically disappear and shut up. We don't want you testifying before Congress, and you better not talk to the press, or we're going to ruin you. That's what was going on. They'll deny it till the cows come home. And there are several, it's my understanding, several, at least three or four, of those employees that want to testify because they didn't really like to be hung out to dry, and that's exactly what happened. The President of the United States gave no orders for the military to respond, and apparently wasn't even there. So I want to know who was in charge. Was it Valerie Jarrett? Who was it? Who was calling the shots here? Apparently, it was not the commander-in-chief. He was off at debate practice. Now, if that's not the case, then, Mr. President, why haven't you disclosed what you were doing? It's just like his transcripts, college transcripts. You won't disclose those either. Usually, when you don't want it, when you're hiding something, there's a reason. You're embarrassed about it. Or maybe more than embarrassed. Maybe you were not doing your job. That's called dereliction of duty when you don't do your job. And that, in many respects, is worse than desertion. Now, it sort of irks me. The president said, well, we don't leave anybody behind. That's the ethic, if you will, the ethos, the ethic. And it is. But in Benghazi, we didn't seem to deliver the goods. And as the Air Force General, I forget his name, it'll come to me, testified in front of Congress, we knew immediately it was a terrorist attack, but we weren't sure what it was about. Was it just an attack? Were they trying to kidnap or kill? Was it a hostage situation? But we knew it was a terrorist attack, and you immediately start moving people. As he said, you march to the sound of the cannon. You get people moving, and we had people in place that could have done it, but the orders weren't issued. And you didn't know how long it was going to, this whole attack would last. And it lasted from late on the 11th into the morning, early morning of the following day. And there were military assets that could have gotten there if the orders were timely issued. No orders were issued. All that needs to be investigated. And after the fact, they're trying to shut up the witnesses, intimidate the witnesses. There's something to hide there. That's why I'm waiting for this special investigation into Benghazi. I think it's going to be an eye-opener if it's done properly. Now, let me relate it to what was happening here. And this, you know, I scratched my head. I was in the military. I've never heard of this, with one exception. Apparently, when the Army was doing its investigation after this gentleman went missing or walked off his military base where he was assigned to, they tried to, and apparently got, the people involved, I'm not saying everybody, to sign non-disclosure statements. In other words, don't talk about this. Now, I can understand why. I thought about it. I said, well, that sort of makes sense in the sense you don't want your enemy to know what you really think happened until you get the person back. That's one sort of generous interpretation of that. But this smacks of what they did in Benghazi. They didn't want the rank and file, enlisted as well as officers, to talk about this. They didn't want to known in the press what happened, that this gentleman, this PFC that was promoted to the sergeant, at least by his people in his unit, in his platoon and company, where he was, considered him a deserter. And he might very well be. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not an attorney. I'm certainly not a military attorney. I'm not an attorney. And words matter. And you need to be precise on this. I think as a minimum, he was AWOL. He was absent without official leave. And his bad luck was he was captured and spent 5 years. I don't think it was a party, but I don't know. I really don't know. So there's a lot of questions this gentleman has to answer, and I'm hoping the Army does its job this time and asks the questions. And if, based on his answers as well as testimony of others, he was guilty of AWL, he should be charged with that. If he was guilty of desertion, he should be charged with that. There are some that are even considering him a traitor, that he gave intelligence to his captors that were used against the military and intelligence in the area. So at best, he was guilty of AWOL. At worst, he's a traitor. In the middle is desertion. And in time of war, this is not going to happen. You can get executed for desertion. And for treason, the penalty is death, as it is for desertion. It obviously depends on the circumstances, and you got to prove it. Accusing someone of desertion or being a traitor is one thing. Proving it is quite another. And we haven't heard this gentleman's side of the story. That's why I say don't jump to conclusions. Many are jumping to conclusions. It'd be very easy for me. Oh, he's a traitor. We should bring him back and try him and sentence him to life imprisonment or execute him. That's jumping the gun. Who appointed you judge, jury, and executioner? But I think the people he served with, as well as the people that are serving and have and are serving Afghanistan, deserve that the proper course of action be taken in this specific instance. There are a lot of unanswered questions, and it's related to benefits. Because if it's AWOL, he'll probably be honorably discharged. If it's desertion, he may get a general discharge or a dishonorable discharge. So the benefits do accrue. These stories are related, the VA situation and his. But what is forgotten in all this? And this is the sad thing. People died. Military, enlisted, as well as officers died searching for him. There was no White House ceremony for them and their families. At best, there was some recognition in their local communities when their bodies were returned to their parents and loved ones and families. Very little recognition, if at all. Yet the President of the United States goes out on the White House lawn and introduces the parents of this sergeant. I cannot believe he didn't know the circumstances. He had to know the circumstances. You don't get to stand next to the President of the United States unless they know your backgrounds. And if you're going to say anything, they know what you're going to say in advance. And the president wanted, what sort of grates on me is this gentleman's father. Now, I know he wants to get his son back, and he's rather vocal, and he's saying his son was a prisoner of war. Technically, I don't think so. If you desert or go AWOL and then get captured, that's a gray area. It wasn't like he was in combat and was captured or kidnapped. He, on his own volition, decided to abandon his unit and his mission, leave his gear and took off on his own. That was his decision. No one forced him to make that decision. But he made it, and it had consequences, and the consequences were American soldiers died. So I don't consider this sergeant a hero. Definitely not. He may just be a young, confused American soldier that had a lapse of really thinking this through, and as a result, spent 5 years in captivity. But unfortunately, the consequences were many Americans died and were wounded searching for him. Now remember, we still don't know exactly how he got in their hands, when. We don't have a timeline. And really, the only person that really does know, and it's really only one side, is this sergeant. But I'm really surprised that the president had this White House lawn ceremony where the parents of this sergeant spoke. You know, it's different if this was a Medal of Honor winner, because there are White House ceremonies for that. It's somewhat customary for the president, if the recipient is alive, to award it in the White House, and it's a rather impressive ceremony. And I've written about one of them, so I sort of know a little bit about it. But those are the true heroes. And the true heroes are really the people that paid the ultimate sacrifice with their lives, as well as those that were seriously wounded and really should be getting their veterans benefit. And really, that should be the responsibility of the president. He's been president for over 5 years. He's been aware of the problem with the Veterans Administration for many, many years. And he touts the fact, as does the Democratic Party and the left, that they're for single-payer, and the best example of single-payer is the Veterans Administration. Yet he did not clean up the mess in the Veterans Administration. He allowed it to fester. Mr. President, it happened on your watch. You were commander-in-chief, and the buck stops there, and you're responsible for it. And you can take a trip to Poland and have this ceremony, and suddenly the news cycle goes on, and we're not talking about the veteran situation, nor are we talking about the recession that we're in. What we're talking about is this trade that sticks in my throat. I've concluded it shouldn't have happened. First of all, you're negotiating with terrorists, and you're giving up what everyone considers to be high-value prisoners. And they're going to go back to doing what they're doing. Mark my words, it's only a matter of time they're going to be doing. I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of them will. These are jihadists. These are fanatics. They're going to go on killing. They're Sunnis that hate the Shiites. So they're going to be killing Shiites. And yes, Mr. President, they're going to try to kill and capture not only U.S. military personnel, as well as State Department personnel, as well as CIA personnel, but other nonprofit organizations that are trying to help the people of Afghanistan. You have put a target on the backs of every American citizen, and as well as citizens of the United Kingdom, Canada, and our allies in NATO that have forces in Afghanistan. How dare you? How dare you? And don't give me this nonsense. At the end of war, we exchange prisoners. Congress never declared war here. Now, we did have a congressional resolution, but we haven't won this war. We're losing it, just like we did in Vietnam, just like we did in Iraq, and just like we did in Afghanistan. We abandon our allies. We have become, unfortunately, and it gives me great pain to say this, unreliable. Unreliable. We don't support our friends. Because once we leave, the people that helped us, the Afghanis that helped us, they also have a target on their back. And many of them are going to be killed and tortured. And not only them, but their families. What the president is doing is, and I said it on the show that we lost, it's strategic withdrawal, what is commonly referred to as a retreat. We're retreating from the Middle East. At the same time, we're intervening in country after country. And see, that's the bigger problem. There's a lesson here, and it's not been learned. It's not been learned. You don't casually intervene in other countries and become occupiers to the people that live there. That is what has happened. We go into these nations. Initially, we might be considered heroes. But as we stay and kill and wound, the people resent us being there, and many of them take up arms. They already have arms, most of them, take up arms and attack us. We become occupiers. It doesn't matter what our intentions are. That's the perception. We become the ugly American. And what happens? American soldiers, men and women, die in faraway places, get wounded in faraway places. And we have people such as this sergeant leaving his post and spending 5 years being captured by the enemies of the United States. So it was the president's call to make this trade, and it's a done deal. It's happened. We don't know all the details for the simple reason the administration is not releasing them, for whatever reason. And for a year, supposedly, they can't leave Qatar where they're at. But mark my words, it's only a matter of time, because these people are dedicated, committed jihadists that want to kill Americans, want to kill Christians, they want to kill Jews, they want to kill Shiites. They're killers, folks, and they're going to go on killing. And who enabled it? The President of the United States. I think it was a terrible, terrible precedent. And he broke the law in setting it, and he needs to be called on the carpet for doing it. And if that means impeaching him, where this is just one of the counts, or one of the crimes, if you will, so be it. We have a president, I think, that is increasingly out of touch with reality. He's acting like a tyrant. He's dictating, making law, which is not his responsibility. He's not really doing his job, in the sense that if you ask Americans what their number one concern is, it's getting a job. That's the number one concern of the American people. And we've already have one quarter of negative real GDP of 1%. And it looks very likely we could have our second quarter that we're in right now. In other words, April, May, and June. We won't know really until about August, before the elections. But I think we're in the Obama recession. And that should be, I think, his focus. I hope you enjoyed today's program. I'm going to give another program in about, 30 minutes. I'm going to need to wrap this one up because this is really a redo. And I apologize. I'm going to be a little late getting it up because I need to do some post-production editing to really tighten it up, because by tightening it up, I mean getting rid of the pauses. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk. I'm the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.